Welcome to Cookbook Club. We are home cooks from Portland, Oregon. Every month, we choose a cookbook, make lots of recipes from it, and then get together to share some of the dishes we made. We talk about what worked, what didn't, and decide whether this is a cookbook we can't live without.
I'm Sarah Gray.
And I'm Renee Wilkinson. This week, we're talking about Vegetable Kingdom by Bryant Terry.
Bryant Terry is an African-American vegan chef, food justice activist, and author. He's written 4 vegan cookbooks. He's the winner of a James Beard Award and an NAACP Image Award. Vegetable Kingdom was published in 2020.
How did you first come across this book, Sarah?
That's a great question. You know, I used to be a vegan, and so like having kind of my finger on the pulse of vegan books has been something over the years that I've just sort of like paid attention to.
I mean, it's interesting that he dropped this book like right as the pandemic was descending.
Yeah.
And I feel like it really made some real positive waves through the food scene and
totally.
Like the recipe cookbook industry.
Absolutely.
I think that it was pretty quickly heralded as like an awesome must-have cookbook.
Totally. Yeah. I have a lot of people who I've talked to about it who know about it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like, you know, it's well known. It's really beautiful.
Have you made a lot of recipes from it?
I've made a handful of recipes from it. It's been one of those books that's a little bit hard to pick up and cook from.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I've been pretty impressed with the recipes in it. So one thing I love about a vegan cookbook is like people can be so creative with the way that they like work on texture and layering flavor when it's totally vegan. And I thought that he had some really solid ideas in this book for, you know, sort of like making things really complex, even though they're vegan, basically.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I really loved, like I feel like this was a major takeaway, is this salad recipe that I made. It's called the All Green Everything Salad with Creamy Sage Dressing.
Yummy.
So good. Everything in the salad is green. So it has candied pistachios on top,
whoa,
which are awesome. I mean, it's also like a nesting doll recipe, right? Because you have to candy those pistachios at mm-hmm. some point. But it was like all green veggies, the crunchy pistachios on top. The dressing was a green dressing with like lots of herbs, but it had silken tofu blended into the dressing, which really like bulked it up in a really nice way that like you almost sort of couldn't detect, but it was like filling because it had that extra protein and that extra tofu, which I thought was really, really smart.
That is really smart.
And I just love that you can kind of carry that forward and add tofu to a dressing in lots of different like areas.
That's awesome.
I just thought it was a very good, you know, like with Ina Garten, like my big takeaway from her was like, throw an egg yolk into the dressing.
Mm-hmm.
Here I'm like, wait, you could put silken tofu in a dressing and blend it in. And it's, you know, it adds texture, which I thought was great.
That's so smart. I wish that my family cooked with tofu more.
Yeah.
And I always get to that aisle in the grocery store where there's tofu and I'm like, I should just buy some. I should just buy some and then find a recipe for it. And then I'm always overwhelmed with the texture options of like, well, do I choose a silken tofu or do I choose a firm tofu or an extra firm tofu? But that's great to know. I feel like usually you see silken tofu in like desserts too, but it's great to know that you could use it for a dressing.
You totally can. And it was delicious. It was a very good dressing.
How hard overall do you think that recipe was if you did not do like the nesting doll candied pistachios on top?
It wasn't terribly tricky. It was a lot of chopping, but that's about it.
Okay.
But I do think those pistachios kind of made it.
Okay.
They were very good.
Yeah, that's the hard part with this book. I definitely ran into a lot of nesting doll recipes and a lot of things that were good, but were too much for me for a weeknight.
Yeah, not a weeknight book, I don't think. Another thing that I really thought was creative and that I really enjoyed, I thought was really delicious, is he has a cornbread muffin recipe in this book.
I saw that recipe. It looked really good.
And when I first read it, I was like, oh my God, this is way too many ingredients for a cornbread muffin, because a cornbread muffin should be fairly simple to throw together. But let me tell you, they're really good.
Okay.
They're really, really tasty. I would venture to say worth it.
Okay.
Especially if you're like maybe hosting a event and you have vegans coming and you want to have like cornbread that everybody can eat. They have dates in them, which made it sweet in like a really satisfying sort of like toothsome way, which I thought was wonderful. And he also does like that flax egg trick where you're like, you buzz up some flax seeds and mix them with water to make like, it's like a binding agent.
Okay.
So it kind of works like an egg.
Interesting.
And as a result, the texture was really nice. So I thought those were great.
I don't think that you should cook from this book necessarily because you're looking for like a vegan equivalent for some things. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the cornbread muffins.
It's not really going to give you that.
Well, like you could make a cornbread muffin vegan in an easier way than he has in this book.
Just use vegan butter.
Right. Yeah.
And some almond milk or something. Right. Yeah.
And like if I don't even remember if there's eggs in cornbread, are there? But I mean, you could easily use like egg replacer or something else.
Exactly.
So I feel like this book is more than that. Like it's you shouldn't go here just because you're looking for vegan recipes.
Right. And I don't think. Yeah. Like you say, I don't think he's trying to recreate cornbread like conventional cornbread. In that way, like he's not trying to make a vegan replacement for it. He is trying to like take it in a new direction flavor wise.
Yeah.
And I think he does that here.
That's a great way to kind of summarize the whole book, really. Yeah. Like that's why he's so smart and, you know, standing out because he's bringing something totally new to the food space, not just like the vegan space.
Totally.
Tell me about another recipe that you made that was a hit.
Okay. I made the dill pickled fennel.
What?
It was awesome. It's pretty simple, actually. I made it like a day ahead of the meal I was going to make from the book. I had like, you know, three recipes I was going to make from the book. I made the dill pickled fennel ahead because it needed to like rest in the fridge for a day. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just like a really delicious brine, bay leaf and garlic in it. And then you just cut this fennel really thin and pickle it. And then it's so good on everything.
He talks about fennel in his introduction, which is called Fennel for Zenzi, which is his one of his daughters.
Okay.
And the big takeaway from that introduction for me is that he was excited to prepare this fennel in kind of a new way, but he was trying to be thoughtful about his five-year-old daughter and like, is she going to like it? Is she not? And, you know, he ended up making it. And because he just makes food like that all the time, you know, his kids are eating it.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate at the same time, like
my kids aren't.
Yeah.
Because I am not. Yeah.
So I appreciate that like intention of like there isn't a kid's menu and an adult's menu. There's just like a food menu. And he is trying to be thoughtful about how to like make things that his family is going to enjoy. But he's not restricting what they're eating to this really narrow list of things just because they have kids in the household.
Right.
So I find that inspirational. I also think there's more nuance there for a lot of families, you know, because different kids come out with their own personalities and no two kids are the same.
Right.
And so I think that's great that his kids were open to that fennel.
Yeah.
Were your kids open to your fennel?
No.
Yeah.
They wouldn't go near it. But my husband loved it.
And I actually looked at the fennel recipe that he talked about from that section in the book, which was different than your dill fennel.
Yeah.
And it sounded delicious. And I wanted to make it because I was like, oh, he talked about it in the introduction. Yeah. Like maybe my kids will like it. And the recipe had so many different steps. I was like,
They're a little overwhelming.
Yeah.
These recipes are long and they have long ingredient lists and nesting dolls.
Yeah. I wish that he had a time estimate in the recipes.
That would be helpful.
It would have been really helpful because he does a good job of explaining in the recipes that I made. Like he did a great job of explaining the steps. Like that felt really clear, but there were so many precise times on every step. And they're not written like step one, step two, like they're not short little sentences. They're like little short paragraphs, which is fine. But you're scanning through that, you know, the day before trying to figure out how long it's going to take you to make this recipe. And it's like, you know, cook such and such for 15 minutes and then do this thing for like 7 minutes and then do this thing for 35 minutes and then add this thing.
Right.
Let it sit for 5 minutes and then come back and do it for another 35 minutes. And that was too many minutes for my little brain to keep track of.
To add up. Yeah.
So a summary would have been helpful.
Yeah.
I made the red rice with spring vegetables.
Oh.
It was a delicious, almost one pot meal. It's really easy to just like add some protein to it. And I do think, you know, we have someone in our house that has PKU, which is this rare metabolic disorder where he has a limited protein tolerance. And so we have to accommodate for that in our cooking every night. So this book, I think, is really good for the PKU community because there are a lot of like great mains in this that don't actually have protein or that you could just like add beans to.
Right.
And this is one of those. So you make this delicious red rice, which I kind of was winging it a little bit because he calls for like 1.5 cups of diced tomatoes. And it's like, I only stock the one big can. So yeah. I just used the one big can. The recipe took like 1.5 hours to make.
Okay.
So you make this really delicious kind of base with like your aromatics. And then you add the tomatoes and you add your broth, and then you add all of these like very specifically chopped. He's like, cut, you know, the asparagus at a diagonal and cut like the in 1-inch increments or whatever. And it's kind of like, okay, it's a little bit like persnickety.
Yeah.
So you add asparagus, peas, and snap peas, which is cool because those are all like pretty crunchy textures, you know. You add that to this liquid, but then you use a spider to like pull all of those out.
Yeah.
Like you put it all in the liquid for a minute and then you pull it all out.
Interesting.
Like that's kind of fussy. Like
blanching it.
Yeah. Like he's trying to get the flavor that you've developed into those, but you know, I pull it out and it's like, I'm also pulling out all these tomatoes and stuff like that, that was supposed to be in the rice, but whatever. Then you add the rice in, you let it cook. It's basmati rice, so it cooks a little bit on the longer side. And then at the very end, you put those, you fluff it, and then you put those vegetables back in on the top and just like cover it and serve.
Okay.
So the vegetables are this perfect texture. Like they still have some good crunch, but they're not raw.
Right.
And then the rice is like really well flavored and delicious. And all my kids and my partner really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But it took like an hour and a half, you know, and that's a little bit
it's a long time
for like a weeknight. I did it on like a Friday night, so it was okay. But I just think that he could take that recipe for his next cookbook and make a much like faster turnkey option. Like, was it necessary to like throw the veggies in and blanch them? I mean, how much flavor did they really absorb from that?
Right.
Or could you just toss them in at the end and let them steam?
Yeah.
I mean, you saute these aromatics for like 10 minutes and then some of them are coming out when you're like trying to take the spider to pull out these spring veggies and it, and like how much flavor are you really building for 30 minutes of all of that before you add the rice in?
Right.
Anyways, that's kind of an impassioned speech about how I want it to be a little simpler.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, sometimes this is like a chef written cookbook thing is like, what, you know, what's, is the juice worth the squeeze, right?
Totally.
Like, is there a way, like you said, just throw those veggies in at the end. You don't have to do this complicated, frustrating step of trying to fish them out.
Yeah. Or saute the onions and then just like dump all the liquid and the rice in at the same time and call it a
just
day.
Just do it.
And like maybe use not brown basmati rice, but like white basmati rice, maybe cooks a little bit faster or something.
Sure.
I mean, it's just give some flexibility to lower our standards just slightly so that we can actually make it easier to make a home cooked meal on a weeknight.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, we would always, you know, if the food was just showing up in front of us, yes, we'd like it to taste absolutely perfect, but it's not realistic on a weeknight. And if it saves me frustration and time, I'm all for it.
Yeah. Should we take a quick break?
Yes, let's do that.
Okay. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
Dropcloth Samplers is a line of hand-drawn embroidery samplers, printed and ready for you to jump in and start stitching right away. Each pattern is hand-drawn by Rebecca Ringquist in her Portland, Oregon studio and printed for you to embroider with your own color and thread choices, like coloring book pages, but for embroidery. And with Rebecca's custom classes on Creative Bug, she can be there to guide you every step of the way. You can find Dropcloth Samplers on Instagram at dropcloth or online at dropclothsamplers.com.
Really, we're not even back in a couple minutes. We're back just like right now.
Here we are yet again.
Okay. Hit me with another recipe.
Okay. I made the sweet potato, russet potato, and tempeh hash.
Ooh, that sounds good.
It was awesome. It was so good. I have cooked tempeh a bunch of different ways. My kids love tempeh, but I always have trouble getting it, like how I get it in a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the way.
How do you get it in a restaurant?
It's like marinated and it's cooked and it's delicious.
Uh-huh.
And I just can't ever get it like that at home. But the secret is you have to fry it.
Oh, yeah.
So you pan fry it after marinating it for a while. And it's awesome. It's so, so good. Like it gets crispy on the edges. It's like nice and salty. Really, really good. And then, yeah, you just do like a hash of sweet potatoes and russets, which just turned out so good. And it's like high, you know, higher in protein because of the tempeh and it's all potatoes. So my kids were really into that.
Yeah.
I thought it was really great. It was like a good, I mean, we had it like for dinner, like a main dish for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was awesome.
That's a great breakfast for dinner.
many steps.
Oh, okay.
But
man, it's like you're really leading good. Me along and I'm like, oh, I'm so into it, Sarah. That sounds so great. I'm going to try to make that. And then it's like
many steps.
And many steps.
Okay. I think many steps is kind of the thesis statement of this book.
Okay.
I also made a recipe called the millet potato and red lentil cakes.
I was really curious about that one.
I was so excited about it.
Is this a dinner type situation?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I went out and I got millet. So you like toast the millet and cook the millet, and then you've got potato also that you cook and like mash up, and then you cook some red lentils. So if you're counting, that's three pans.
Yeah. I'm already not into that.
And then you form them into cakes and then you pan fry them. I did not pan fry them because I don't like pan frying, but I did brush them with some avocado oil and like roast them at a high temperature.
Okay.
Which kind of works the same way and it's less messy. And then after all that, they did not taste like anything.
Oh, really?
It was a real bummer.
Just like under seasoned.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I thought they were mushy.
Oh, bummer.
In sort of an unpleasant way. I wasn't sure what the millet was adding.
Okay. What is millet like when it's cooked?
Mushy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because the only experience I have with millet is making those delicious millet muffins.
Right. Right. But does it get a little bit crispy?
It just adds like a crunch.
Okay.
It's like a crunchy texture. Yeah. It's not like hard, like it's going to break your teeth or anything.
I mean, maybe there was like a hint of a crunch, but not really. And the red lentil, like cooked red lentils mixed with cooked potato, it was just mush.
Yeah.
I didn't think they were good. I made them when my vegan mother-in-law was here, and everyone very politely ate them.
Oh.
But I don't think anybody enjoyed them.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was kind of a bummer.
It's a good concept. I wonder if part of this is like testing, not enough home cook testing of people who aren't as skilled as Bryant Terry to be able to like try the recipes and make the, you know, cut the corners that we naturally do as home cooks and see if the recipes still hold up.
And, you know, that's always our criticism of a chef written cookbook.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it just seems to work that way a lot.
Well, I made a really fabulous lentil stew out of this book recently. And that was, to me, like the home run experience that I've had with this book.
Okay.
It was not a quick recipe, spoiler alert, but it was really delicious. I think that's hard to do sometimes with a soup that's vegan, because when you have the option of adding meat or
stock
then it's like kind of a cheat, like you can just add so much flavor so quickly. So this recipe was a combination. It starts with a combination of onion, parsnip, sweet potatoes, and carrots. So already there's like a nice base of delicious vegetables that you... I thought this was interesting. He always calls for them to be diced. Hmm. In like every recipe that I made that had like vegetable kind of aromatics like that as the starter, they're always diced. Okay. So they're like so small that you don't, you know, notice... Like, you don't get a mouthful of, like, an identifiable carrot.
Right.
Which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you go through, you cook those, saute them, then you add your lentils and your tomatoes and all that kind of stuff, your vegetable stock. He calls for rich vegetable stock, which he has a recipe for in this book, which I did not do. I just added the better than bouillon vegetable stock.
Yeah.
So when I was near the end of this recipe, I tried it and it tasted pretty vegan to me, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like it was a little bit boring.
It's a little bland.
But the last step, I think, is what makes this amazing. And okay. I think you could apply this to other soups. So in a separate little skillet, you melt a quarter cup of coconut oil.
Okay.
And then you take like a whole bunch of garlic, 6 cloves of minced garlic.
Okay.
And you saute it in that hot oil.
Okay.
Until it starts to get aromatic. And then you toss in some cumin seeds.
Ooh.
And toast those. And then a little bit of sweet paprika. So you're like opening up the flavors of that garlic and of those spices.
Yeah.
And then you drizzle that, which is kind of a lot of fat. I mean, it's like a quarter of a cup, but I mean, you're making this huge thing of soup. So really, like, that's not that big of a deal.
Right.
But you drizzle that whole thing in the soup and stir it around. And that is the magic of this recipe.
Yum.
So that is what made it taste fabulous.
It really elevates it.
Yeah. I would totally make that again, except probably not, because I would just do Melissa Clark's Dinner in French and put some sausage in it.
Right, right.
But and if you were vegan or you're just trying to reduce your meat, like that's a great lentil soup. It will not save you any time, but it is delicious and flavorful.
Sure. That's good. That's good. I made a soup too, the creamy carrot coconut soup, which I thought was good. It was sort of simple. I mean, there was no big takeaway. It was coconut milk and carrots, you know, but they do work well together because the creaminess, and the, you know, but it was kind of basic. I thought it did have some spices in it, which were nice.
Okay.
That was probably the simplest recipe that I made from this book. Like, it didn't have a million steps.
Mm-hmm. That seems like it could be a good base for like sautéed chickpeas and oil that you just like mix in and make it a bigger meal.
Yeah, exactly. That would be really good.
Yeah, I think this book is good for like ideas too. Yeah. You know, like the millet lentil cakes. Like, I think that's a good idea. It just like needs just maybe a little bit more
quite
tinkering. Yeah. There.
Yeah.
Did you notice that he makes like a song recommendation on each recipe?
I did. So it's kind of cool. Like, he talks in the book about how music is like such an important part of his life. And so every recipe in this book has a song pairing right on it. And so I did put on the music as I was listening to it. I will say it does not really follow a theme, at least the ones that I picked out. I mean, I didn't listen to the whole soundtrack of the book, but like, there's like some hip hop and there's like some soul and there's like the songs that I listened to, I felt like, yeah, okay, this, I could see this going with this recipe, but it's just really kind of like something fun to listen to while you're cooking.
I do love the idea of listening to people's soundtracks in general when you're cooking or having like a dinner party.
Yeah.
Like, that's a fun little rabbit hole to go down of
totally.
Like, there's like a soundtrack on Spotify that I found recently for someone who just loves putting together soundtrack mixes, but they have, I guess, a little bit more of a theme, and that's why I'm a little bit more open to it.
Sure. Sure. It's curated.
Yeah. So like the one song, you know, listen to this one song while you're cooking a recipe that takes an hour and a half is not so helpful.
Well, I can't listen to it on repeat, Brian.
But he does have, like, I think it could be cool to listen to his soundtrack at the beginning of the book.
Sure.
Where he has like, you know, I don't know, 100 songs or something on that list, and then try to do that.
I know there's a lot of music throughout. Well, and like when we did the Colombiana book by Mariana Velasquez for the cookbook gathering, our friend Melissa made the playlist from the book and then put it on for our dinner. And that was lovely.
Yeah, that was super fun.
So, you know, if you were going to like eat from this book with people, you could just like go through and make yourself a playlist from the book.
Mm-hmm.
Should be pretty cool.
That's great. Okay, so let's get down to like brass tacks here.
Yeah.
Who is this book a good fit for?
I think it's really good if you're vegan.
Or have a protein restricted diet,
sure,
but you're a grown up.
Sure.
And so you want like challenging gourmet meals that are going to be easy to take the protein out of.
Exactly.
Because you're not using that protein to build the flavor, typically. Yeah, you're building it with other things.
I think there's some great ideas and some great flavors in this book, but it is not for a weeknight cook or a new cook. It's complicated.
It doesn't feel like a family cookbook at all to me.
Yeah.
I believe that like kids will eat this food and my kids ate this food. But I think when you think about cooking with a family, your time is typically more constrained, and that's, to me, kind of a reality. And I know that people who don't have a family are thinking like, I don't have tons of time, and I see you and I get that. Right. However, like, I have, you know, baseball lesson or baseball practice followed by soccer practice. The kids get out of school. They have to be in bed by 8. That leaves you this real tight window of like when work is done and when you have available to make a meal. And so you have these like restrictions on your schedule.
Yeah.
And like dinner has to get on the table, and you have this extra pressure of like, and it has to feed 5 people or 4 people or 3 people or 2 people or whatever. But like there's just more, you're just working in this tighter box and it's tricky. And so even though I think kids would eat this food, I can't do a 1.5 hour to 2 hour meal on a weeknight regularly.
Yeah, it's not going to work. Yeah. I think it's beautiful. I also think it could be just a good source of inspiration, whether or not you're actually cooking much from it. It's got, you know, it's got the music and it's got some really great ideas. I do really like it overall a lot.
The photography is really beautiful.
Gorgeous.
I enjoyed that. I agree that it's great for inspiration. There's a lot of nesting doll recipes in this book, as many chef written cookbooks have.
Yeah.
So you could just spend a little time dabbling at the back of the book where he has a lot of those nesting doll recipes.
Yeah.
Or I think, like, I'm trying to think if you were doing like a Whole30 type thing.
Sure.
I think that some of this book would work for you, but not all of it.
Right.
But at least like it has more places where you can go look deeper to try to pull out some recipes that could work.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
And even like some of the recipes felt good for summertime to me.
Yeah.
Which I didn't make a lot of those because it hasn't been super hot here yet, although now it's going to get really hot.
Yeah.
But I just don't feel like cooking a lot, too, in the summer.
I know, that's the thing. You don't want to spend a bunch of time in the kitchen.
Yeah, but his stewy things that I made were real good.
Yeah, yummy flavors, for sure.
So does this book earn a spot on your cookbook shelf, Sarah?
I don't think it does.
Oh, burn.
I know.
Just kidding.
I just think it's too complicated for me right now. You know, I think there was a time in my life when I would have appreciated it a lot more, namely before my kids arrived and when I was vegan and was always looking for like a new recipe to really like shake things up.
Mm-hmm.
But right now it's just too complicated.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. How about you?
No, I don't think so. I really appreciated the beautiful photography and being kind of immersed in Bryant Terry's world of food, but I just don't see myself cooking from it on a regular basis right now. And maybe in like a few years I will, or maybe he will come out with a second cookbook.
I would love to see what he comes out with next.
That's more like everyday designed.
Sure. That would be great.
Okay, so we're looking at our editorial calendar for the next few months, and I have some real bummer news that I was recently diagnosed with breast cancer, which we give a big thumbs down as a 40-something mother of three.
Fuck that.
Yes, the prognosis long-term is good, but short-term, that means I have to have some treatment. And so next up on our list, we have Mi Cocina by Rick Martinez. And we are really excited about this book and we really want to record this episode. But just know that this episode might be dropping in the next month or it might be a little bit delayed and it will just be a surprise episode that drops this summer.
That's right. And we are also going to be taking a little bit of a summer hiatus to give Renee some time to heal and spend some time with her family. So you'll be seeing that Mi Cocina episode coming at some point this summer. And then after that, we'll be back in September.
And we are definitely a go for season 4. So we are super excited and we have a lot of exciting books to cook from this coming year.
We definitely do. So send all your good vibes Renee's way.
Thank you.
And cook along with us between now and then. Just tag us on Instagram at Cookbook Club Show. Or send us a voice memo or a comment at cookbookclubshow@gmail.com. You can find us online at cookbookclub.show.
And a special shout out to Sweetums for the awesome 5-star review that they left us. We really appreciate that. Remember to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss the next one. And if you have time to leave us a review, that helps other home cooks find us too.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.